is John chapter 7, verse 21. We'll read through 24. Sisters.
Jesus answered and said unto them, I have done one work, and ye all marvel. Moses therefore gave unto you circumcision, not because it is of Moses, but of the fathers. And ye on the Sabbath day circumcise a man. If a man on the Sabbath day receives circumcision, that the law of Moses should not be broken, are ye angry at me because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath day? Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment.
All right, back to verse 21. When Jesus said that I have done one work and ye all marvel, what one work is he referring to?
Wasn't that the man that he met down by the pool of Bethesda, that he made whole, who had gone into the Catholic synagogue and was seen of others and recognized?
That was much earlier, wasn't it, that incident, as I recorded. See, there are a lot of events that took place between. But evidently, it was something comparable to that, of which John doesn't state. He evidently did a miracle in healing somebody. It was on the Sabbath day, and he was being criticized for healing on the Sabbath day. And now, when we read his argument here, he's trying to show that he was justified in healing on the Sabbath day. So the one work that he did something outstanding of which John doesn't even narrate what it was.
But I think, yes? Or maybe in general, the one work means one type of work, that healing on Sabbath day. Just in generalizing terms.
That is a possibility. I'm inclined to think it is some unspoken incident that occurred at this time. Verse 22, Moses therefore gave unto you circumcision, not because it is of Moses, but of the fathers. And ye on the Sabbath day circumcise a man. If a man on the Sabbath day receives circumcision, that the law of Moses should not be broken, are ye angry at me because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath day? We have to take those two verses together, really, to make sense. Why does he put the word therefore in? Moses therefore gave unto you. I think that's probably an improper word. I haven't looked it up, but I think that another word could be used to betterment there. And someone just, if you have the concordance. Sister Dawn, you haven't got your Nestle.
No, Alan's the one with the Nestle.
Oh, is that?
Karen's got the Bible.
Okay.
Doug, can you read 22 over?
Yes.
In the dialogue?
Yep, in the word for word. Not the side column.
Moses has given to you the circumcision, not that of the Moses, it is, but of the fathers.
Now go right back and read that once more. Moses?
The beginning?
Yeah.
Moses has given to you the circumcision.
Now that makes more sense. See, I felt the word therefore is out of... It throws you off. Because if you say Moses, therefore, you're referring to something else. But even if you're referring to the miracle that previously had been done, it still doesn't seem to fit right. Now, I think he's doing it Moses gave unto you circumcision. Not because it's of Moses, but of the fathers. And ye, on the Sabbath day, circumcise a man. See, from that standpoint, it would...
He's referring to what I said before about this man. It's interesting. And the man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought his life because he had done this.
Yeah, but that's at a much distant date.
I know, but I was going into the temple and I thought maybe in their hearts this still was aggravating, you know?
Well, he's done a great many of Jesus' miracles. A great many were done on the Sabbath day. If you go back and review them, you'll see that the occasion was on the Sabbath day. So it was a practice that he wanted to emphasize their wrong condition of heart. It really would reveal that they didn't understand the principles underlying the law. I'd say it was something analogous to that, but I think it was something more recent. Now, you see, he would be speaking then more forcefully, where if he says, Moses therefore gave unto you, it doesn't seem to match the vigor in which he's been pursuing this, his reasoning here. Notice the verse 19. Did not Moses give you the law? You see, it's got some oomph to it. But when you come to 22, that therefore takes the oomph out. It doesn't seem to jar, at least to my ears. But if you put it, take it the other, Moses gave unto you circumcision, it's more positively stated. And it is interesting now to think on that. The circumcision rite was supposed to be performed when? All right, on the eighth day. But now the eighth day may not necessarily be a Sabbath day, but if that's a law that on the eighth day, supposing that eighth day happens to be a Sabbath day, it's not nullified. It's the eighth day from the time that child was born. Therefore, whether it's the Sabbath or not the Sabbath, the ritual of circumcision should take place. And now he's trying to reason that there are different types of laws. There's a higher law, and there's a lesser law. We always use this one on the airplane. That the propeller or the propulsion overrides the law of gravity. But it doesn't nullify the law of gravity. The law of gravity on these airplanes is always in operation. But a higher law supersedes the lower law, and thus it flies and doesn't fall to the ground. And so it's along that line that in studying the law that we should weigh the circumstances involved in connection with the activity of which you're trying to apply the letter of the law. Are ye angry at me? Are ye angry at me because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath day? Then the final one. Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. So he's speaking pretty forcefully. Now, isn't it true that you can judge according to appearance?
Superficially.
That's right. Now, how in the law does it tell us to try to steer us that we do not judge according to appearance? What are some statements in the law?
With God, there is no respect of person. Is that in the New Testament? But it's based on
Yeah, it's on the Old Testament, too. Do Deuteronomy, I think. But we're just referring to them rather than go and look in the concordance. Yes? All right, go on, Sister Karen.
By your fruits you shall know them.
All right. In other words, what a person could be, let us say, a wolf in sheep's clothing. But even a wolf in sheep's clothing will betray himself inadvertently on the game. But for the moment, he might fool somebody because of maybe he has a soft manner. He might have a very gentle manner. But you cannot be by nature something and hide it any length of time. It has to come out and be revealed. So in a case like that, you just wait, and you'd weigh matters, not looking for just one act, but for a manifestation of the true self. The poor. It tells us in the law that you, when you judge the wealthy, or you judge the poor, you're to ignore their wealth or their poverty. It's to be completely ignored. We usually quote only one side of that. Of course, it's quoted in some cases just one way. Regard not the face of the poor. That means when you're in judgment and you're a judge and you're weighing a case, you might see the poor person, oh, he's such a poor thing, and then you render a judgment in their favor because you're looking at them, and that isn't judging righteously. You judge righteously by judging as it actually is. Those personages are not to, you just quoted that a minute ago.
Well, I think you're referring to...
No respecter of person. Now, the respecter of person, the person could be wealthy, influential, or he could be very poor and in need. But in judging, you're judging the issue. What is it that's being brought up that needs to be settled? Yes.
Well, then
it's
19:15-35.
All right, would you read?
He shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. But in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbor. Verse 35, ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat broad, in meat yard, in weight, or in measure.
What was that citation again?
Leviticus 19:15-35.
There are other citations too. That's a good one. Because a judge can be influenced. Like today, if you have an individual in a corporation, almost invariably the jury votes in favor of the claimant and against the corporation who is being sued. Because they think, well, they got millions. What's a little, you know? And you'll notice when you read these cases that it's so much preponderant the other way. They sue them for $2 million, $5 million, $3 million. And maybe they won't get everything they sue for, but they get the judgment. And I think in many of these cases it's not properly done. And then you think, well, the corporation has no soul. This is a person with feeling and blood. And the corporation, why, that's... That's like a, and they say that, you know, there's that saying, a corporation has no soul, because of that. It's done through stocks and in other ways, like such an institution. But you do not weigh a case on personality, influence, and appearance, but righteous judgment. And that's hard to do. And that's what we're called to be. We must recognize that this is the way of the Lord. Now, we may make wrong judgments, but so long as these wrong judgments are not done in perverting what we know to be the better judgment, if we knowingly or willingly do, and thus we have to learn, we have to have that in our heart so that if we are exalted and so forth by God's grace, we would really render righteous judgment on under all circumstances. Yes.
Well, Jesus mentions Moses in verse 22 in regard to circumcision, but then says, not because it is of Moses, but of the fathers. This isn't the first time. They associated Moses so closely with the law that although he was one of the greatest of the ancient worthies, they were giving him undue respect in view of Jesus' presence in wisdom. So don't you think, would this be another case where he's giving a proper, putting Moses in the proper category? In other words, he was a great man, but they must always remember that anything Moses did came from the Father, and here he's showing that even the circumcision rite was given to Abraham, far preceding.
Yeah. Yes, when he says it was given to the fathers, plural, he doesn't mean that necessarily they originated it, but God originated it earlier through other individuals, of which the more famous one is Abraham, because Abraham, when he was 75 years of age, had to go through this. And the Apostle Paul, in his epistles, sometimes alludes to that. That before the law, the circumcision was given. And also you have the Sabbath was before the law. In other words, when the Exodus occurred and they went to Mount Sinai and a code of laws or judgments were given to Israel, it did not mean that all of these were original. There are several parts of the law that previously had been observed, even with the sacrifices. But most of the sacrifices were burnt offerings and covenant-making sacrifices. But there, nevertheless, there were, and even with Cain and Abel, Abel offered a sheep animal which showed even way back there that without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. That even the coming redemption was prefigured in enactments long before even the law came into focus. Can we go further? Sister Chai, 25 through 29.
Then said some of them of Jerusalem, is not this he whom they seek to kill? But lo, he speaketh boldly, and they say nothing unto him. Do not rulers know indeed that this is the very Christ? Howbeit we know this man whence he is. But when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. Then cried Jesus in the temple as he taught, saying, ye both know me, and ye know whence I am, and I am not of myself, but he that sent me is true, whom ye know not. But I know him, for I am from him, and he hath sent me.
Now when we go back to verse 25, then said some of them of Jerusalem, notice, of Jerusalem, not of Galilee, because there were many Galileans down there. This is the, what observance are we talking about here?
Feast of the Tabernacles.
The Feast of Tabernacles, one of the three feasts that all male Jews of age were required to attend. Then said some of them of Jerusalem, is not this he whom they seek to kill? But lo, he speaketh boldly. Well, when we say that's in harmony with what we believe we said earlier, that when he made these statements, he said them with some with vim and vigor. It was not just making statements. Sometimes a wise man will just make a statement, calm, deliberate, and so forth. Now, this, though, is done in this circumstance with emotion. That he made these statements. And incidentally, this reminds you of something that happened much earlier, remember? They said, his brethren, remember the brethren of Jesus? What they said about him? why are you hiding up here in the desert, in the secret? If you want to be somebody and your doctrine to prosper and you feel you have the truth, you should go down to Jerusalem. But he said, my time is not yet come, and so forth. And he stayed back and let them go down because the Jews were planning to take his life. But he went. It wasn't as though, but he did it in his own way. And this is so true of human nature. Sometimes a circumstance arises and somebody prods that you should do something about it. Prod somebody. Instead of the person realizing that they have a responsibility, they try to where Jesus, when he was, it was inferred that he was cowardly, that he was not, that one we mentioned earlier, it must have hurt him to think. He came here to die. And that was his one thing he knew that he had to die on the cross. And to face that stark reality, because if you really knew that you're going to be crucified on the cross, and you know what that entails, most people would be so, that would be their on their mind until it happened. It would just absorb all their thinking. But Jesus had to think of who he was dealing with, and he was doing healings, and he was answering arguments, and he was teaching, and so forth. In spite of that, such courage as and calm, and then to be accused of that. And then he gets up at this feast where he knows they're out to kill him, and stands up and speaks boldly. Well, you can see this is his true nature. But he does it in his own time and in his own way, and not at the prodding of others. Yes.
You can see and hear the hypocrisy of the people in the crowd. In verse 19, he's really direct, and he says, "Why are you going?" Jesus says, "Why are you going about to kill me?" And people say, "He has a demon." You know, like, this is so ridiculous. How could he say that? That, you know, who's trying to kill you? Is he like he's crazy or whatever? And then he goes and says a little more. And 25, he says, some of the people from Jerusalem says that he isn't this the one whom they seek to kill. And then in 30, they're trying to lay hands on him. So, you know, it seems so hypocritical.
But wouldn't this be different with the people within the crowd?
Well, we had discussed this earlier, that there are different groups in the crowd in the earlier lesson. And some that were sympathetic to him, and some that were not sympathetic to him. Some said, "Oh, he's a good man." And then the others said, "Oh, no, he's a deceiver. This isn't a..." And so forth. So we tried to show that in earlier. And then the reason why he brought this subject up, there probably were several reasons of which, but we're coming to one now that, in view of him repeating this, but we haven't come to the verse that we will go into that more. But definitely, it said the Jews were the ones who were plotting them. And then we went, who are the Jews? They are the people that lived in Judea, in the vicinity of Jerusalem. Like it says in another place, "Thou art a Galilean, thy speech betrayeth thee." Means here's a person that evidently was born and reared in Galilee, and he has a sort of a dialect. Well, so when John speaks of the Jews, he's not speaking necessarily in a derogatory sense, but in an identity sense as to what segment of the crowd was involved. Incidentally, there are books written on this of anti-Semitism in the Gospel of John. This is a well-known, writers have done this in the past, where it's not true. I mean, it's a wrong. And in Judea, it was really the ones who felt that their position was being threatened were the ones who were plotting really to kill him, which would be a certain element of the scribes and Pharisees, who could see that if this man became too popular, the people would not fawn on them. You know, like it's a rabbi, this and so forth. And if they noticed Jesus as rabbi, which some of them said, Rabboni, so forth, that the more they would go over to him, the less they would have respect to themselves. So but that would be a relatively small segment of the population. So we have to make the distinction. In this instance here, do the rulers know indeed that this is the very Christ? Now here's some that are sort of sympathetic. They decide, it's a mixed multitude. This is the very Christ. Why would they say this is the very Christ? What would sort of add conviction to this? Here are some of the crowd now. Some said he was a good man, some said he's a deceiver. Now, but here it says, know not that this is the very Christ. Possibly one thing would be the miracle, which is not gone into detail. The miracle he performed. Do you marvel at this one work I do? Second, the boldness with which he spoke. He spoke as one having authority and not as the Pharisees and scribes. Well, see, the Pharisees and scribes would, in speaking to the people, would certainly draw a line. They are scribes and Pharisees, see. But even though they were in that position, their schooling, how they're taught, how they're to intonate certain words, the sing-song style of saying the Hebrew and all, shows that these are men who are schooled. They're schooled. But Jesus comes along, who is schooled long before them, but he has intonation. It makes sense what he says. The very fact that he described in the law of Moses, don't you have circumcision? Isn't that work? And it's on the Sabbath day? Do you criticize Moses because of that? Oh, no, no. You have to use a little sense that there are some things that can be done on the Sabbath day that do not violate the law, such as healing, and another instance is such as when they
sacrifice
the priest. The priest had to sacrifice animals. And those animals, some of them weighed a couple tons. And maybe a ton or a ton and a half, and they had to skin them, flay them, take it off, hang them up, and quarter them, and prepare them to go on the... That's work. I mean, I was on a farm, and I remember just one cow being slaughtered for food. The school, and when I'd see that thing hanging up there on that on the crane, I mean, it was some piece of animal that had to be dressed, and that's work. But that is work that is permissible because it had to do with the sacrifices of that day. So see, some people they say they make laws. You cannot. You never judge. Never, never, never judge. But that's not true. So you have to see that there are other places where it is permissible. And the same thing with not working on the Sabbath day. Thou shalt not work on the Sabbath day. And they carry that is like a definite law. But Jesus shows that there are cases where you can, but you have to judge very carefully, because if you disobey God and disrespect his Sabbath, well, then it is serious. But and then when they took the corn from the fields, they walked through the fields and they stripped the kernels into their hands and they rubbed them briskly to get the outer chaff off, and then they'd eat these hard kernels, chew them for food. And they were criticizing his apostles because they were this rubbing their hands in the corn, to, preparing it to, for them to eat. That was work. It's carrying something to an extreme that is shows that they were hypocritical in that particular enactment. Therefore, you have to judge righteously. You have to weigh the circumstances of things that take place. Now, we're here, this 27, howbeit, we know this man whence he is. But when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. Now notice, they say he is not this the very Christ? And then if we know that this shows that there's all kinds of opinions. And the, earlier it says they murmured. They murmured among themselves. So you have this struggle going on as a result of his doctrine, his discussion at this moment, and his behavior on this occasion.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as you're saying that some would voice the opinion beginning with verse 25 is not deceived, ending with that this is the very Christ, and that would end that quote, then you get a counteracting opinion, how be it, who went to
this. Yeah, that's right. Showing it's there's mixed opinions in this group. Otherwise, you have a problem reconciling.
Mm-hmm.
Brother
Frank?
Yes.
When they say in 27, how be it, we know this man whence he is, meaning that they thought he was a Nazarene?
Yeah, well, that would be one thing. They would know he was a Nazarene. They would know
his
parents. But they probably, in Jewry, would not maybe know as much detail about his background as up in Galilee, where he was in his own hometown. But they would know he's from Galilee, and right away, that turns them off. Has a prophet ever come out of Galilee? Can any good thing come out of Nazareth? So
that it's kind of ironical, though, because they didn't really know where he was from. That is Bethlehem.
Well, and it depends how you get the application. They would know where he came from in the sense that he resided up there in that area and come down. But of course, as you're inferring, actually he was born in Bethlehem, not in Nazareth. So they wouldn't know that too well, as well as a lot of other things. Yeah.
But you did say that they were from all different parts, right? They were from a mixed multitude. So some might have known where he came from and know his parents, and others again did not know. Right?
Yes. Go on.
Brother Frank, this idea on the end of verse 27 that no man knoweth from where he is, but when Christ cometh, no man knoweth from where he is.
Yeah.
Is that partially, they get that idea from Malachi 3:1, where it says, and the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple? That they were getting like an idea that it was he was going to come suddenly and that you wouldn't ever know that he was here before.
They couldn't like geographically pinpoint at what point he left in to make his appearance, but they had the idea that he would come probably like Elijah in rough garments and from the desert and appear suddenly. But what part of the desert or that? No, that he would make a sudden appearance, as it were, out of nowhere and into their midst. This is very confused situation here, and we come now to verse 28, where we have another thought which needs to be. Then cried Jesus in the temple as he taught. Did we read this? As he taught, saying, now here he says, ye both know me, and ye know whence I am. And I am not come of myself, but he that sent me is true, whom ye know not. But I know him, for I am from him, and he hath sent me. Now, how can he say here that they both know Jesus, and they know whence he is? This seems to be contradictory on the surface. Now, how do we explain that? Wait. confused first.
Well, is he trying to say, you do know I'm from Nazareth, but you know my real source is from the Father in heaven? You know, they should be able to put the two things together.
I'm thinking John the Baptist, when he was immersed, didn't he say, behold the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world? John,
yes.
When he was immersed, then of course, two lashes, he was unable, so that there was some, if this is a mixed multitude, and that did know, or had heard some of these remarks.
Yes, there could be no doubt that there would be some there, because multitudes went out to John, and when he identified Christ, but he didn't say he's Nazarite, and he didn't say he was a Galilee, but others would say that. So in the populace, they certainly would know something about Jesus that occurred, some momentous things that they would hear of or about. And this is another one. Connection with his baptism, that he was pointed out as being the Messiah right now.
Again, would it, maybe this is one of those statements that was made to the general public, but meant for the scribes and Pharisees more, that they in fact did know that he was the Son of God, and that they willingly tried to plan his demise.
Well, they certainly should have had their eyes opened with regard to the works that he did, because he says, if you don't like appreciate or understand my doctrine, certainly you should recognize what I'm doing, you know, which was plenty of miracles, that they should weigh the facts, and these facts should counteract their prejudice, which they certainly were prejudiced against it. You'll notice that,
but he seems to reply to the their question on 27, how be it we know this man, 20 years, and he replying that in terms of you know me whence I am, and as a person in flesh, but you do not know true source where I come from.
That's right. That's what we feel in the situation here. And it's interesting that he uses this just the opposite way in another place, in this same setting somewhat earlier. Not necessarily the same day. Let's see, is this the last day that he gets up? Because there's one time where he gets up at in the middle of the feast.
That's
this is the
middle.
Later.
This is the middle of the feast.
And
in the next chapter, this is the same thought is kind of reiterated. In verse 42, Jesus said unto them, if God were your Father, you would love me, for I proceeded forth and came from God, neither came I of myself, but he sent me.
Yes. In three places in John, close together, one yet future that you are quoting now, and now we're reading in chapter 7, and earlier he gave a discourse almost exactly like this, but John states it the opposite way. And that's why I try. He says, ye know me, but then in another place he says, you don't know me. That's earlier. Maybe it's the fifth chapter or so. Yes. Now, which verse? He speaks very similarly here, but there's a place where he says, you don't know me. We had read this.
Verse 33, he sent unto John, and he bare witness unto the truth.
Yeah. But where he uses this expression, the John does this a lot, which I wanted to point out, but I haven't got it here, where he says the opposite, to be under the word know. Ye know me, you do not know me, another place. And it was earlier. We had had it in the previous lesson. For instance, here it says, ye believe not, ye sent. And the reason I wanted to do this is to demonstrate about John that he's the most difficult apostle to understand in his writing. And yet, Jesus spoke in a language probably closer to what John did, but inflection of how he says something is what carries the way. And that's why many Jews are known that when they speak, they use their hands a lot. They have one of the smallest vocabularies. They have maybe the old Hebrew 7,000 words is their vocabulary. About 20 or 30 years ago, when I was in school, maybe a little longer, it was 40,000 words in the English language. And I'm sure it's much more than that now. And of which the average person would know far more than 7,000 words in the English. But in the Hebrew, it was the same. But what they would carry the day with was the way they said something, the way, whether it's with sarcasm or with sincerity, or by motion of the head, gesticulation. This is known to be a Semitic type of presentation. And so when Jesus spoke to the people, it would be known or felt what he was really intending to mean, where when we come along and read it cold, it's more difficult unless we get the inflection. Let's see. No, that reference is in the future here. It says chapter 8:14. That's what Sister Dawn read. But no, it's an earlier one. We'll look it up later. Now, but as Sister Chai said, that he's referring that they knew him as a man, and where he was reputed to have come from, and whether it was by John the Baptist, or whether it was about the rumor that he was from a Nazarene, or that he's a Galilean, or so forth, they did know some temporal matters, but not in reality. He that sent me is true, whom ye know not. But I know him, and I am from him, and he hath sent me. Now, you could see that many people could resent that. That when Jesus would say that I know where I'm from, and the Father sent me, and I speak truth, it implies that the others do not know, do not love, do not appreciate. So much that Jesus did was not the most tactful way of speaking, because it was not meant to be tactful. He was to announce the truth that as it really is, and not to assume a false role of being an inferior person. He was the Lord who had been sent by his Father. Notice verse 30 that they resented that. Let us read 30 through 34. Next, please. I think this is Brother Russell.
Oh, that's fine. Then they sought to take him. Wait, is that right?
That's it. Yeah.
But no man laid hands on him, because his hour was not yet come. And many of the people believed on him and said, when Christ cometh, Will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done? The Pharisees heard that the people murmured such things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. Then said Jesus unto them, Yet a little while am I with you, and then I go unto him that sent me. Ye shall seek me, and shall not find me, and where I am, thither ye cannot come.
All right. Now, of course, he's certainly speaking in parables and mysteries to them, you know, in this type of language. But you can see the resentment in verse 30. Then they sought to take him. That is, the ones who, in that multitude, who were turned off by his remarks, who felt that he was presumptuous in analyzing them as to how their true character. If somebody comes and tells you that you're the devil, you don't know the Father, you are this and you are that, you would have to be a most honest individual to say, well, that's true. That's true, I am, and so forth. You would, to do that would be, and the great the story of humanity is they would resent this. And so they want to apprehend him, and they would know that the scribes and Pharisees, that there's like we mentioned the previous study, that there was a contract out for him, which is mentioned earlier, that they actually had they were plotting to kill him. So those in the crowd who felt he was a deceiver and who would seek to apprehend him, they knew that they would have the backing of the ones who wanted to kill him. So they could do it with no fear involved in doing something that they would be punished for.